You always gotta wait till it finishes and starts recording, because I always start too soon and then the front end gets cut off. Super annoying.
I'll bet.
How are you doing?
Good.
I was itching to record.
Welcome to Geek Brunch Retrocast.
I know. Geek Brunch retroactively casting.
How's it going?
Pretty good. It's been one of those weekends where I've just kind of been doing chores and reading and watched a little bit of football, but nothing overly stressful, nothing overly exciting, but enjoyable all around. You know what I mean?
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Nothing too much going on, which is fine with me. I like weeks every so often where there's not too much happening.
Yeah, for sure. Kids back at school and stuff.
Yeah, they started 22nd of August. So.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. They've been going for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Ours start right after Labor Day, so they started on the 2nd, or the 3rd, rather. The 3rd, yeah.
I remember when I was in elementary school, I don't remember if it was like this through my whole career, because, you know, the memory cheats, so you think something was true and it not always was, but I do distinctly remember we would go on Friday and it was Labor Day weekend, because I remember watching the telethon. Is that even still on?
I think so.
Okay. Well, that was like a big deal as a kid, you know? Michael Jackson would be on the freaking telethon.
Yeah.
So, especially for us, we didn't have cable. So you would have one day of school, just you go in there, learn who your teacher is, whatever, and then you'd have that telethon, and Monday you'd finally beg your parents enough, they'd let you donate a little bit of money, and then you'd make the bell ring on the local TV station, which got you all excited, and then it's back to school the next day, and that's when it really would start, would be the day after Labor Day. So.
Yeah, that's when the... It would really sink in that this is it. School's back.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah, we've always been in our area. It's always been, for whatever reason, the Wednesday after Labor Day.
Okay.
And it's held true for all of these years. I was a kid, my kids. Then suddenly this year, and they must have sent out at least 4 email and text message reminders telling everybody that the first day was Tuesday. Why they changed it, I don't know, but it's never been the very next day. It's always been the Wednesday.
Right.
And this year they started right on Tuesday. So I don't know. I don't know what the difference is, but I work from home. So it became very, very quiet again when I'm working. Went from a very busy, busy, noisy house to just dead silence.
How does one feel about that?
You know, it's funny because when school ends, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh God, it's like it's gonna be a mad. And honestly, don't get me wrong. They're so and the older they get, the better they are. They're so good and independent and stuff like that.
Sure,
but you know they'll come in often just to ask questions and stuff and.
Right.
My daughter has a habit of stopping in here when now I've got a new boss that all the old ones didn't care about a webcam. They really couldn't care less. And now the new boss is like, oh, we want to see everyone on webcam. So my daughter has some sort of like psychic ability to come in only when I'm on a call with our whole team and our boss when I have the webcam on. Like before, I could mute. And I could, you know, turn and talk to her and stuff. I'm like, I can't even do that anymore because people can see that I'm not paying attention. What I'll end up doing is I'll like, you know, cover my mouth up like I'm rubbing my nose or something. And sure. I'll talk to her without looking at her.
Oh, you do the mouth coverage where you can't see the lips moving.
Yeah. So funny. Anyhow. It always what I was getting at. I kind of went off on a tangent, but you know they come back. I'm like, oh boy, now is you know it's going to be crazy. I've had all these months of just silence,
right?
And then September comes, and I think I'm going to be really, really excited. And I honestly miss not having them around.
Oh, sure.
You know? And it's like, oh, God, it's just quiet and, like, it's, just nothing's going on. I'm all by myself.
It's just one of those examples how life is never perfect because I always think, like, summer. And then, but ultimately you're like, oh, man, summer's over. Now we got to deal with school again.
Yep.
And then you appreciate what you really like about summers. For me, I appreciate I get up. I don't have to deal with getting the kids ready for school. And I basically kind of have the morning to myself and Kristen.
Mm-hmm.
And the pets, you know, you got to take care of them still. But once school starts, you're like, okay, hard cut off on any me time at 7 a.m. And then it's go time it right up until I walk out the door.
Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
and I also get home later too, cause, I have a different schedule. I push back an hour, half an hour during school days so that I can make sure that they all get out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know about y'all, but post COVID, school buses have not been as trustworthy necessarily as they were before.
Same here.
Yeah. So you can't trust that your kids are on the bus till the kids are on the bus.
Well, I don't understand what happened. I understand at the time and immediately following. I don't understand 4 years later. I'm not understanding. Who are these people that four years later, is it that they just don't need, like, they're all short. Why are we so short on bus drivers?
So here's what I'm guessing. We just did this thing about generational diversity at work. We did a training on it. My guess is, from what I understand, there probably were a lot of bus drivers that were of a certain age, probably 60 plus.
Yes. Okay. Because I was just going to say most of our bus drivers are a little bit older. I mean, maybe so, even my age, but.
Because they were at risk, we sent a lot of them home first.
Uh-huh.
And some of them probably just retired and never came back. So the birth rates have been down, as you know, in general. So there are less of Gen Z. There are less of Gen Alpha. And obviously all of us are less than the boomers. So that workforce is just slowly shrinking in general.
But maybe you're right. Cause it just seemed odd to me. And I couldn't think of it, but it's funny that you said that about the bus drivers, because I didn't know if it was just a local thing or, but I guess it's everywhere. It's like,
happened here.
It happened there too. So it's crazy, but you know, and it always rough at the beginning of the year, cause the bus drivers are getting their roots down and of course the kids are getting used to it as well. But there was one day, the second week of school, Joe, they're supposed to be at school at 9 and first period starts at 9:15.
Right.
Their bus picked them up from the bus stop at 9:25.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Last year,
insane. Jack. Yeah,
I know. Last year, Jack had so many of those where I would have to follow up or he would have to follow up. So the way it's supposed to work, if the bus gets you late, you're supposed to run into the office and say, okay, my bus dropped me off late. You get a pass, you go to class, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was happening so much, the office was just telling the kids, just go on to class and tell the teacher.
We're wasting more time, yeah.
Yeah, so, cause you know, there'd be busload after busload. But what was happening, Jack was, you know, I don't know if he's shy or whatnot, and he's probably never going to listen to this, so that's fine. But I think he would not tell his teacher. So I get like, your student was missing from one or more periods this. And I'd ask him, I was like, did you not go? He's like, no, I was late. Did you go to the office? And he's like, yeah, they've told us not to do that anymore. I'm like, well, what the heck is going on? And I think he was just going to like PE or whatever it was, just straight. Dressing out and going in late and not saying anything.
Not saying a word, yeah. Didn't want to cause waves. It sounds like it's something that our kids would do. seriously. But that one day that they were that late, so basically missed all of first period, right?
Sure.
So in our school, they get notifications that, you know, such and such bus is late. They, I guess, make announcement on loudspeakers for the teachers not to take attendance.
Okay.
Apparently, my daughter's teacher decided to take attendance anyhow.
Right.
So we get all these notices that she's absent, that she hasn't come to school. Now, it turned out that we just got them cell phones,
mm-hmm.
and she literally texted us saying, you know, we just got picked up now at 9:25. And then
right.
she texts and say, okay, we're now at school. If it wasn't for that, me and my wife would have been out of our minds.
Oh, I'm sure.
What happened to her? Did somebody right. grab her from the bus stop? Like, what happened?
Right. Right. No doubt.
Oh, and I'm like, I don't know. It felt a little, I know everyone's busy, but it felt a little irresponsible to send out those notices. I don't think it would have taken a lot of extra work to do a cross check of who's on the bus that hasn't arrived.
Right.
As opposed to who's being marked late or absent, I should say. And maybe let's not send those notifications out
right.
until the bus is here, you know?
Right.
Because they acted, my son wasn't marked late and they were on the same bus together.
Are they twins?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay. I knew that. And I just wanted to double check. And it was like, yeah, they're twins, right? And I'm like, I mean, they just don't have the same class.
Well, they just didn't have the first same class. So
okay,
his
sure,
teacher
sure.
did what was requested and her
right.
teacher did not. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's even doubly scarier because you're like, what's going on with the one kid and then where is the other kid at?
Did something happen? Like, it's just odd. But it's funny that, I mean, me and you are separated by quite a few states and encountering the exact same problems.
Right. Yeah. So this year started off like that, right? And you're on how many days now? Just like 3 weeks or so?
Yeah, they're going. Yeah, so, I guess so. Yeah,
they've gone
through 3 weeks. So this will be their fourth week.
So is that still happening or is it settled down?
They're getting picked up more around 9. Now the bus technically is supposed to get there at 8:45.
Right.
Bus is getting there at maybe a couple minutes to 9, but they're making it to, I mean, they're the last pickup. So that goes right to the school and they're making to the period. I don't know how much homeroom they're in, but they're making it to the first period at least.
Now, I'm trying to remember, what grade are they in now?
So they just started middle school. They're in sixth grade.
That's what I thought. I thought they were Henry's age. Okay.
Yeah.
So, they just ours had been at elementary school for all of my older kids, i.e. my two kids. For the first two kids, elementary school was where they had sixth grade. And this year's the first year.
Yeah, a lot of them do.
They
some
moved
of them
to
sixth
graders.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. So sixth grade at the middle school has been a little bit of a challenge because I don't know if Henry was really ready for it, but that's what happens, you know.
That's what happens.
They get sent whether they're ready or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whether I'm ready or not.
Yeah, to the point. So far we're not thrilled with their middle school. They seem very disorganized in general, but
we'll
see how it goes. I mean, the teachers teachers mostly seem okay. It's more the administration there. It seems not to know what the heck they're doing.
So this is the first time they're really like changing classes a lot too, I bet.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. Before they're just in one class and they'd all get up together as a class to go to gym or to even they had a separate science class, but they'd go all together as a group. So.
Yeah. Ah, gosh. Kids growing up is the worst, man.
How old is your oldest?
My oldest is 16. He just got his license, so he's driving to school this year. Which
how fun.
Nerve-wracking, too.
Yes, I know. It's like it's always something new, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, my gosh. I got in his car the other night to take my daughter to library for this advisory board thing that she does. And I get in his car because I'm trying to be fast. And because my daughter's kind of gross sometimes, and I'm just like, ew, you're wiping boogers everywhere. You're not doing that in a new car. So I'm driving the whole car to get her to teen advisory board. And I can't see out of the side view mirror at all. It's like, what? And I'm like trying to adjust it. And so we get there safe. I park. It's bent almost completely in. You know how some of them will, like, you can fold? So it was folded like two thirds of the way. And I was like, how in the fuck was he driving this thing? So I popped it back out and I was like, hey buddy, now you know you can't roll this window down, right? He's like, yeah. I was like, so are you checking your mirrors before you drive off? He's like, yeah. I was like, okay, man, because I can see shits up the side of the car. I mean, like, you're like, you're already worried about them driving, and then you're like, holy crap, they're like out driving with like one of their most important mirrors not functioning.
Right.
Yeah, that freaked me out. I was like, oh god.
it's always some. So we live on a nice side street, nice little neighborhood, but we are a street away from one of the most busy streets, really, in the entire Western New York area.
Okay.
So, you know, they're 11. This past summer, you know, they wanted to go up to the pharmacy to Rite Aid. I don't know if you have any Rite Aids out your way. Okay. So, they wanted to go up to Rite Aid, and, you know, they were going to go again. Their twins are going to go together. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's fine. Oh my God. I didn't consult with my wife.
Oh, yeah.
She was not happy.
I get that fear. Kristen was wanting them to walk around by themselves this summer. I was like, oh, I guess it's fine. Stay in the neighborhood. Nope. Yeah. They're walking down to Culver's, which is like a fast food place. They're walking down to the curb store. I can't think of what it's called. It's some weird generic name like Quad City Market or something. But, you know, and I'm just like, Jesus, dude. Yeah, it freaks you out.
It does. But it's like, because it's right. It's very close. Like you just walk down our side street and you know, you make a left onto this, you know, the busy street, but then you're on that strip plaza. You just walk along the strip plaza and, you know, there's Rite Aid at the end.
Right.
But you know, I mean, and I understand, you know, where Stacy's coming from as well. It's like, that's a very busy street. It's right off of the highway, you know?
Right.
So, you know, she's like, well, you know, somebody could grab them and then just be on the highway in 2 seconds and gone. I'm like, I do understand that, but at the same time, like, what age is appropriate for them to be able to go to the store by themselves? so we're going back and forth, and it's, you know, and we agreed, okay, you just have to make sure you're very aware of your surroundings. Right. Don't be, especially now that we gave them phones, you're not going to just sit there and look at your phone while you're walking. You're going to make sure, you know,
that's the part that scares me.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cause my daughter is a phone addict.
Yeah.
It's funny. This story fits right into a book I read a couple of weeks ago. It's like The Coddling of America, and that somewhere. And I think it's because our generation of kids, where a lot of us had both parents working, we were the first ones that were just kind of let loose.
Mm-hmm.
Completely.
The latchkey kids.
The latchkey kids. Because, yeah, I mean, the kids before us had a lot of freedom, too, but mom was typically at home.
She was
whereas,
at home,
like, we would be out doing God knows what, going to who knows where, and nobody was at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and basically, how did we get from that to, you know, a trip to the corner store freaking us out? Like it literally like was freaking me out when I heard this, what they were doing. And then I'm like, why though? Like I was doing that kind of stuff when I was probably 7.
That was my, and me and Stacy come from totally different types of backgrounds in terms of where we grew up.
Right.
I grew up in the little suburbs a bit, one point in my, you know, not year after year, but one particular year, it was like named one of the safest towns in America and stuff like that. And like, it's, you know, we went all, but I think about it, I'm like, we went all over the place. But, and obviously my parents didn't necessarily, I was not a bad kid, but they, you know, it wasn't expected that I told them every detail of where I was going. Because that's just not what you did back then. You know, we were all over the neighborhood. Stacy grew up in kind of a rougher part of the outer edge of the city of Buffalo itself. And, you know, that was not something that she was, you know, able to do. She wasn't able to go out and do things on her own.
Sure.
So coming from two different extremes, and trying to know, okay, what is the reasonable middle ground? But to your point, I see so many of like the youngest employees that we have at my place that are like in their early to mid 20s. And I'm telling you, Joe, if they don't expect that everything should revolve around them, it's absolutely insane. And that's not how I want my kids to grow up, because it's not how life works. And better they learn, you know, a little bit of independence and stuff like that now than have to be slapped in the face across it when they're in their first job or something and find out, no, you're not you're expected to take care of yourself, and it's not the company or, you know, anyone else's problem to try to make sure you're cared for, you know. I don't know. It's really hard. I mean, it's like anything else. It's hard to know what the right thing to do is when you're a parent.
It is. I think that's one of those things that everybody's going to make their own decision, and those decisions, you just hope they're the best one, right?
So. Yeah, and not only is each parent different, but what might work for one child may not work for another child, because every child is different.
Totally.
It's like you can't even have a formula. You know what I mean? Like, okay, this is exactly what I'm going to do, because each child is so different.
Yeah, you literally don't know what's gonna work to kid, you know. And that was Parenting with Rob and Joe. Please join us.
Oh my God, it's everyone's favorite segment.
Chris is just recouping from a big trip.
Where'd you go?
Mike
Alaska?
Is in what, Baltimore?
Mike is definitely in Baltimore. I've been seeing his pictures on Facebook. He's hanging out with Daryl Taylor and with Bill Bomer and a couple other friends. So I'm sure they're having a ball.
Oh yeah, you said Chris was in Alaska. Is that right?
I thought that's what he said. I could be
wrong.
That's
wild.
I thought that's what he said. I really want to go to Baltimore at some point. It just never seems to be in the cards by the time, like at the time that we have to kind of like finalize plans. I'd love to go with and meet Mike, and I've never met Mike in person. So
sure. It's so crazy. I discovered Mike after I had left the great state of Colorado.
I know, right?
I had a good friend who had passed away a few years ago. He I think probably got me into a lot of comics I'm actually fell in love with. Both the guys I knew that I traded comics with as a kid in the local neighborhood are dead. That's morbid. Anyway, the funny thing is, like, I moved to Knoxville right when he moved to Denver. And guess where I was moving from?
Is that right?
We basically swapped spots.
Oh my God. If things would have been a little bit different, you guys could have.
I know.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah. I remember a post he put up. He was like, he was rebuying some Daredevil. And I was like, oh yeah, that's because I got yours, buddy. But yeah, he was moving to Knoxville. I mean, he was moving to Denver from Knoxville, and I was moving from Denver to Knoxville. So we swapped spots like almost within like months of each other.
That's so funny.
Yeah, life's weird, man.
Yeah. So before we get going on this stuff, now that summer pretty much is over, I guess it is over as of today officially. How was your summer with you and the family? Did you guys? I know you guys had that trip and.
Yeah, we had the Minnesota trip, which was kind of like for Sophie's birthday. We went and took. I don't know. Kids are funny, and I'm funny too, because like we're starting to think about these things. Like, why does my brain work the way it is? Cause that's what you do these days. You look at yourself and try to figure out why you think the way you work. But Mike always says that he's a mood reader. I always say that I'm a rabbit holer, and maybe it's kind of related, but you know, I get in these moods where I just, will go down the path of one thing or another, and I stay there till I get tired of it, and then inevitably I come back eventually. I mean, I could be like, oh, I hate that publisher, I never want to read anything by him again, and then a year to the date I'll be buying everything that publisher did again. So, it's just one of those things. I think the kids could be that way too, you know, and maybe it's not just a me thing, maybe it's like a genetic attention thing. I have no idea. Anyhow, so at the time we thought she was really into Green Day, turns out maybe it was a little less so than we thought, but she actually really liked the Smashing Pumpkins, so it all worked out just fine. But yeah, we were taking her to go to the big concert, and we kind of made like a little mini trip and just stopped a bunch of little weird things on the way there, like the Spam Museum. And <That's awesome.
laughs> did you see the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota?
No.
Okay.
Is that a thing?
I don't know. It's a song by Weird Al Yankovic, though.
But other than that, you know, just work. At work, summer's really busy because, you know, we got to entertain the kids that are out of school. So
right, yeah.
We stay pretty hectic at the library.
So how was Green Day? You know, Zach, out of nowhere, because I like Green Day, but he seemed to have, like, they came out with that new album, and I bought it. I played it. I thought it was great. And
yeah, it's good.
Yeah, he happened to be in the room a couple of times. He's like, oh, I think I really like Green Day. So he's a big fan now of Green Day. How was the concert good?
It was phenomenal. My problem is I'm old. So we saw the Linda Lindas short set. They were great. We saw Rancid, a little bit longer set, maybe twice as long as the Linda Lindas. Rancid was great. Smashing Pumpkins. It's kind of like Modest Mouse. I like the songs I could recognize, but there's like a droning effect to the Pumpkins where it just, everything started to sound the same.
Okay.
And it just started to tire me out. So by the time, so they had a long set. So then Green Day comes on. They're doing kind of best ofs, and then they did All a Dookie, and I was there for that.
Wow.
Like, that was great. Then they did a couple more best of kind of songs. Then they did all of American Idiot. Now, American Idiot was the point in my listening career.
All of American. How long did they play?
That's where I'm taking you right now. So they did all of American Idiot, and American Idiot was was in the era that I was no longer actively buying albums from Green Day.
I'm telling you, just to interrupt you for a second.
Yeah.
When that album came out and I listened to it, I go, how is this? How in the world is this Green Day? There are 9-minute songs on here.
Yeah.
It was, but not in a bad way, Joe.
Right.
One of the best albums I had ever heard in my life.
Well, see, I had never heard it in its entirety. I had only heard the radio stuff.
Yeah.
So while it was good, I was getting tired. It'd been a long day.
Oh,
so this is like,
I love it so much. I would have loved to see that show.
So it was like 10:30. We've been in our seats since like 5. I was getting tired. So I was like,
I mean, not only are they apparently playing for a long time, but you've already seen 3 bands.
Yeah. So I was like, I texted to Kristen. I was like, all I really wanted at this point is to hear Bobby Sox, but now I just kind of want it to be over.
I really don't care. All I want to hear is thank you all. Good night.
Yeah. And then, they did Bobby Sox after they did American Idiot, and it got me pumped up a little bit. And then he's like, well, we don't do encores because we think that's, you know, self-serving rock star bullshit. And I was like, cool. But we are going to do some more. I was like, oh, my God. But there's some more was just good riddance, and it was a night. And that was
it?
Yeah.
Oh. Where did you see them again?
In Minnesota at a... is it Target Field? It's wherever the Twins play.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
when I get a chance, I'm actually going to look up the set list.
Yes, you should. It's really good.
Target Field in Minneapolis, August 17th.
Yeah. And all I could be wrong. So if I'm wrong about the exact way it ended, forgive me, but that's what I remember. I remember American Idiot, Bobby Sox, Good Riddance, Goodbye. They might've had one more in there. I can't remember.
Wow. This is crazy.
Yeah, it was a long day.
No, so you're right. They played the whole thing. Bobby Sox and Good Riddance. You got a good memory.
Yeah, but it was a good show. I mean, no complaints. I'm just old and tired and go to bed at like 9:30 every day and get up somewhere between, you know, 4:30 and 5 every day. So I was just pooped.
Wow, that must have been a long show.
It was
5:30 Linda Lindas.
Yeah. Yeah. Linda Lindas were good though. They're like, it's so funny because it's like nothing but old guys on this tour and then like a group of teenagers from like LA. Yeah.
That's funny.
But it was still good. They did a little short set, and I asked Sophie after, like, what was your favorite? And she's like, well, Smashing Pumpkins and then the Linda Lindas. I was like, okay. I was like, yeah. I wouldn't agree with you with the Smashing Pumpkins, but whatever. I don't know if I was their biggest fan to begin with. Maybe part of the problem too. You know, I like them okay.
The thing is with them is, okay, I've never seen them live, but
I've seen them live once before at a Lollapalooza.
The only ones that I really love are the two out, like Siamese Dream and the Double Melancholy
and Infinite Sadness.
Yeah, Double C. I have some of their other stuff, but nothing really hit me the same way. So I'm not sure how much I would like watching.
There was a couple of weird songs he did when the band was kind of falling apart, and it was just kind of just him doing his own thing in the studio, Trent Reznor style. That I think it was called Adore. Where's boom boom, boom boom, you know, really electronic. I actually like a couple of those songs.
Oh, okay.
Just because it sounded so different than what they had done before, you know.
Yeah.
But the other problem with the Pumpkins is, for me, I think they hit really hard and then they kind of just vanished. So, and I always wondered kind of like what all happened there, because I know like the drummer, who is back by the way, got fired for drugs. And then, I think Billy was dating, I can't remember what her name was. Was it Darcy?
Darcy, yeah.
And then they split up, and then James Iha was off in like Europe discovering bands. And I was just like, I just never loved them as much as a lot of people did. But
so
that's
who's in that band now?
So it's the original drummer, James is back, Billy's back, and different
person. Everyone but Darcy.
Yeah, and she's a younger lady. I don't know. I don't remember what her name is. Like for the Pixies, like when we saw them, they replaced Kim Deal with one of the lead singers from Lush. But I don't know who this person from Smashing Pumpkins was.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Pixies was a good show, too. Did we go in spring? I don't remember when we saw them. That was good. Modest Mouse, not so much. Ugh. God, I didn't realize how much I hated Modest Mouse till I saw them live. I was like, wow, they do 10-minute songs that all sound the same, and they seem like a very bro band. Like, it was a bunch of, like, you know, hipsters thrashing around to them, and I'm like,
wow.
This is not my energy, man.
I haven't seen any. We didn't see any concerts this entire year. There were just there were some that I probably would have seen, but none were coming here to Buffalo. Yeah. They were either in Syracuse, which is not that far away, or Toronto, which is honestly even closer. But it's not worth. They're not such a band that, like, oh, we need to make the, like, the 2-hour trip back and forth.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it was either the band wasn't quite up to, like, I need to go out there to see them. And anyone that did come to Buffalo, I wasn't interested to see at all. So,
right.
Like, we just didn't end up doing anything.
Yeah, we get stuff here, like, that are really small. Like, we got Flogging Molly come here, and I would probably go see it, but I don't know how much the tickets are, and I don't love the venue, so I'm like...
That's the third thing consideration, or ticket prices are out of control.
Yeah, so I'm like, I like Flogging Molly. I'm like, I don't know if I like them enough to not just listen to them on Spotify in the mood and just move on.
Right, yeah.
The last show of the year we're going to, and Kristen's been working through her bucket list bands. We missed one of mine because, I'll come back to that in a second. So we saw Depeche, we saw Pixies, and her other one's Toad the Wet Sprocket. So we're going to see them in, Illinois next month. Actually, in 2 weeks or something. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. But, I always wanted to see X again because when I saw X as a kid, I thought they sucked. And then when I got into listening to like punk and hardcore, I realized, okay, this is the sound. And now I like them a lot. And then we had tickets in Knoxville to go see them, and there was a death in the family, so we didn't get to go. And then they're on their final tour, of course, this year, and they announced Chicago. So I'm like, we're going to go. And it was like, and announced, and it was like that weekend. So like, they announced on like a Wednesday, and then the show was like on a Friday night, and there was no way I could do it.
Yeah. How far is Chicago from you?
Like 3 hours.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, we might could have pulled it off, but I think it was like working that Saturday.
It's no notice at all.
Yeah. And I was like, well, God damn it. Well, I guess I'm never going to see them again. So my only live memory of them was hating it and waiting for Ziggy Marley to come on.
I think the only one that came around here, and this is just more of a nostalgia, it'd be cool to see once, was Stevie Nicks.
Sure.
Game. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like either one of us are huge Stevie Nicks fans, but you know, we definitely appreciate her and respect everything that she's done. It would be cool to see. Then right. You go online and you check the ticket price, and me and Stacey are like, oh no, never mind. Like, I would like to see her, but not for that amount of money.
It's crazy how much ticket prices cost, and I think it's what we have done to the artist by basically becoming a non-physical media consumers of music.
It's the only way that they can, that they make any money at all.
I think that and merch is how they have to do to get by now, because I think Spotify and Amazon Music and Apple Music or whatever. And God, Kristen still listens to Pandora, which I pick on her about. I'm sure they get like pennies, you know.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm sure. But, I mean, I read a little thing because, you know, I'm a big fan of Pearl Jam, and Pearl Jam did a little bit of a tour, but nothing near us at all. But, you know, they were getting flack because they're famous for trying to keep their ticket prices low, at least in the past. And their ticket prices were quite expensive, apparently. And, you know, they interviewed Eddie Vedder, and he's like, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And the amount of money that venues now charge them.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, with obviously you have to, you know, hire security, you have to hire, you know, all that stuff.
You got to move all the stuff around.
Yep. All that stuff and everything has blown up in price. And he's like, yeah, we love touring, but you still have to make money touring. We can't tour and lose money. And this is the only way to do it. You have to charge these prices now. Otherwise you can't actually turn any profit at all, which is absolutely crazy.
And think about some of these bands or more like pop groups, but think about somebody like Taylor or Dua Lipa or Beyonce, where they're going to have like movie set production.
Yeah, exactly.
Cause we watched the Beyonce movie and the Taylor movie.
Yeah,
I mean, the production in these things, I'm like, it's wild how much goes into it. So yeah, the ticket's going to be like $300 for the nosebleeds.
Yeah.
Because they're putting so much into the stage and everything else, and that shit doesn't build itself.
No. So, and it's true. Everything is expensive now. So
yeah,
it's crazy.
Speaking of which, comic books.
Comic books are expensive.
Both of mine were $1 that I'm reading today.
Well, that wasn't expensive then. You did a good job.
Yeah, you go on to my comic shop on Tuesday nights, and you try to get them as quick as they can, because some of them will either get pulled after they sell however many they want to them, or they'll sell out. And so, yeah, I try to be on there as quick as I can Tuesday. And even then, sometimes I'll be about to check out and that, you know, trade or whatever you thought you were about to get for $1, it'll be gone before you get out. Because they don't do the reserve thing like a Ticketmaster would, you know, where it's in your cart and you got it, and they're like, whoever buys it, it bought it, and then it's gone. So
once it's sold, it's gone.
Yeah, but both mine today are dollar books.
You want to cover one first, and then I'll go next.
Yeah, I can do that. You want weird mainstream or weird indie from the 80s?
Let's start with a weird mainstream, and then we'll go get weirder as we go.
All right. I am old, so I got to take off my glasses if that's what you're hearing me whacking myself in the face with my headset. So we got Lex Luthor's Action Comics. This is from the Cornell run back right before, I want to say, New 52 hit.
I was going to say, I think that That was right around then, yeah.
So here's the problem sometimes.
What issue number was it?
It is issue number 891.
Okay.
You've got Bizarro on the cover, basically looking like Frankenstein. Lex is looking like, actually, you mean Lex looks like Frankenstein and Bizarro looks like Frankenstein's monster. Yeah, that's what I meant. And this is one of those things you run into when you buy dollar issues of what we're going to kindly call modern books. Is it's in the middle of a story, so I started reading it, and I was like, I don't 100% know what's going on here. But that's okay. We'll figure it out.
That's right.
So this is Cornell, Pete Woods, and Cafu. It's funny. It says Cro-Magnon writer Paul Cornell, prehistoric pencilers Pete Woods and Cafu. I thought Cafu was the one doing all the Valiant stuff at one point, right?
He was doing a bunch, yes.
Okay. But it very much looks like Pete Woods. So I'm guessing that Cafu must have been doing the inking. Because the only thing really Cafu is kind of the weird wonky eyes every so often. I always thought Cafu never quite got eyes right. But that's just my opinion. All right. So what's going on? We've got a bunch of cave folks and Lex Luthor with a spear. And he says, that's my point, Og. And you're like, what? You could have started better there. But whatever. So they need fire is the gist of it. So Lex is holding an apple. He throws the apple to the cave people, Cro-Magnons, what have you. And there's a citadel up top with some gods. And Lex is going to rob the gods. So he does the old hello at the guard. The guard looks one way and he runs the other. He sneaks up to the fire. And this is like straight Greek mythology here. Steals the fire and runs away. And as they try to catch him, the temple starts to fall. He gets down to the Cro-Magnons. My people, see what I've brought you. I took it from those who didn't deserve it, and I did it all by myself. And then cut away, and it's Mr. Mind. So basically, what Mr. Mind has done, he has taken over and hijacked Lex's mind, and he's creating all these dreams and fantasies. And I don't know about you, but one thing I've never been a huge fan of in comics is like, you think you're reading something and the next thing it was just a dream.
Yeah.
So that's this issue to a T. So anyway, he wakes up and he's dressed in Frankenstein's lab coat and he's like, I must have fallen asleep. It seems so real. And you know, the Universal Monster movies, don't you?
Very well.
Okay. So Elsa Lancaster. You've got Lois dressed up like Elsa Lancaster minus the white streaks in Frankenstein's lab. And she says to Lex, you going to check out what you created or what? And he goes, I guess so. You got to be careful. And he pulls the sheet off of the monster and we get a big ad for Brightest Day. And I was like, oh yeah, that was a thing. I forgot all about Brightest Day. Looks like a bunch of dead people being resurrected. Was that what that was?
Yes.
Okay. Then we go away from the ad, and they still haven't pulled off the sheet, even though he was pulling it off in the previous page. And Elsa's like, or Lois, why am I calling her Elsa? She's like, I thought you weren't afraid of anything, least of all bedclothes. And they have a long discussion, like, who's it going to be under the sheet? Is it going to be Superman? Is it going to be Superboy? Is it going to be me? Elsa's saying, is it going to be me? Because it turns out, I did it again. Lois says, is it going to be me? Because it turns out you don't know, you may know this if you read the previous issue, which I didn't, that this isn't actually Lois. It's like a robot Lois. Does any of this ring a bell to you?
No, but I read it.
Yeah, same. I read it a lot.
I read it 14 years ago, so.
Right. I could read something a year ago. See, I have this thing with comics. If I don't think I'm going to get it read and I get it filed, I tape it a certain way. But I'll also sometimes reuse bags, and so those might be taped a different way, so it's not 100% proof. So I'll pull stuff out, and I was like, I think I read this, but boy, I don't remember any of this. Anyway, so Lois is a robot. They pull the sheet off, and it's actually him. And we go back to Mr. Mind. He's like, I hope you appreciate what I'm doing, ha ha ha. And then they're back at the lab. The townspeople are coming to after Lex. Lois is like, don't let them drag me away from you. And he says, you ungrateful wretches, after all I've done for you, hold on. And now he's a cowboy. So he's a cowboy. He's like, where am I? What is she? So he's lost his memory again. But he does know that he shouldn't be in the Wild Wild West. So guy comes up, Sheriff, Sheriff, there you are. It's Big Blue. He's back in town. Well, of course he is. So he goes outside, and you've got Clark dressed up in a red, what do they call those long shooter-looking tombstone jackets? Dusters. So he's like in a duster, red cowboy hat, kind of a Lone Ranger-style button-over thing that they used to have that only the Lone Ranger ever wore, and like a yellow bandana. So he's out there, and he's like, Big Blue's back in town. Yeah, you said the flattery and obsessive enmity of what you want me to pay attention to. Don't you know I'm cleverer than that? Call me the anti-Bob Marley. So he says that. I guess that's supposed to be funny. And it's like, it's okay. So he shoots the guy instead of the sheriff being shot, whatever. this is such a weird comic. So Mr. Mind's freaking out. He's like, oh no, he's changing the fantasy. He's become conscious. He's not under my influence. He's trying to drag me into, and then we get a page spread for Hero Factory. We Build Heroes, issue number one, because you demanded it. I don't remember demanding a Lego comic. Did you?
No, I never demanded one.
Yeah, I don't think I even want one.
Nope.
So he busts into the saloon, and of course at this point he's drugged Mr. Mind into the dream. He said, this is exactly as I expected. Lois is tied up. Mr. Mind has got a gun to her. He says, you go for your gun, I'm going to blow her mind. He said, Mr. Mind, you're a telepathic caterpillar. Have you ever turned into a butterfly? He goes, well, actually, I'm an offspring of the original. And he goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he tells him to shut up his nerd speak. He says, I think you're afraid of me, so I'm going to start controlling this dream. And so he makes Lois's, what do they call those things? Gags. Disappear. And Mr. Mind, in reaction to that, becomes like a giant kaiju. He's actually pretty cute for a kaiju.
Jeez.
Yeah. And he says, this is a job for Lex Luthor. He rips his shirt open to a bare chest.
This is a very, very odd.
It's really weird. He goes up and he super punches Mr. Mind. He says, there's more than one battlefield. I just have to take control. And so now they're on top of Lex Tower. He's shrunk Mr. Mind down to a pipsqueak in his mind's eye. He kicks him as hard as he can, and it makes him explode. Mr. Luthor, that thing was controlling us. We didn't mean any of that stuff. And this is his employees, I guess, who had actually been in all the different dreams trying to come after him, because it turns out they were like in the townspeople, they were in the cowboy dream, yada yada. And so then we get to the last couple of pages, and it's him and Lois, and this is where we find out that it's a robot Lois. And I find this really interesting because it's a robot, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, what does that mean? I don't know. Why has he got a robot Lois running around? Anyhow, I guess you need to go back and read the previous issues. I will once I get marked down to a dollar. So, Lex is talking to her, and she's like, it makes me really uncomfortable that you had me in a dream. And I'm like, she's a robot. Why does she care? But whatever. He's like, well, I decided that I can't be working alone anymore. The black rings are going to be a problem. I was like, what are the black rings got to do with anything? Because I guess this is post-Darkest Night.
Yeah.
And so the next issue, dun-da-da, he's going to be bringing along a specialist, and the next issue is called Deathstroke on Ice. So I'm hoping it's going to be like Icecapades with Deathstroke, but I bet that's not what we're going to get.
That's very odd.
It was a weird one. Yeah, there's a little sneak preview for Green Lantern and Emerald Warriors, which I thought that came much later on. I thought that was a post-New 52 one, but I guess it wasn't. It's basically Guard Gardner, and I think he's going to end up teaming up with John at some point.
I don't remember why this was Lex Luthor's Action Comics. Do you?
No, I don't.
I'm looking at all the covers, and I mean, it goes on and on that he's on all the covers. There's no Superman until 900.
I remember buying some of them. The way I used to buy, I wasn't working at the point where this was coming out, so my comic budget was a lot smaller than it is today.
Yeah.
So I would buy something, and then I might drop it because there was something else I wanted more, and then I'd pick it up back again. and then I drop it and I pick it up. So I have random issues through that run, but I don't have the whole thing, and I've never bothered jumping online to read it, because while I like it, I mean, I got enough physical stuff that I hardly ever get to use in the online service unless I'm on the road. And usually, here's the funny thing, I use it to read, like, the physical stuff I'm working on at the house.
Right.
You know what I mean? So if I'm, like, in the middle of an Essentials and reading Luke Cage, I'll probably just jump onto Marvel Unlimited to pick up where I left off when I left the Essential at home.
Right.
So. So you're using it to read stuff you've already got. But yeah, so yeah, it's not a huge gap. Like, I knew it was a Lex Luthor run because that's where he famously met Death.
That was a few issues later. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have that issue because I remember thinking, like, oh, I better get this one. And I was right, because if I'm not mistaken, I think that one ended up being pricey on down the road.
It's showing me in the, and now our, the database, me and Mike both have.
Yeah.
Not super reliable when it comes to the cost, but it is saying $51.
Yeah, that's more than I would spend on a comic in general.
So that's a decent amount for something that's only, you know, 14 years old.
Right? So I remember going, like, oh, that's when I better pick up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it was entertaining and weird. I read other stuff in the last 24 hours, it was probably better, but I don't know if I read anything that was much stranger.
Probably not.
You know what I mean? So I was like, well, this might, because you always, when I come on here, I was like, well, is this one worth talking about? And then sometimes I'll be like, eh, maybe not. But that was weird enough that even though I didn't think it was going to be necessarily the most enthralling one to talk through, it was weird enough. I thought it was worth talking through. I'll tell you a couple of other ones that were up for nomination. I am reading my continuity books that Kirk sent me finally, and those are freaking wild. I put them in date order, so I'm working through Armor and the Revengers right now first.
Oh.
That stuff's just bizarre. Like, Neil Adams, just, he's an interesting writer.
is that interesting?
Well, he's just like, so, I just don't know that he's very good at it. You know?
I will tell you, the things that are most fresh in my mind are some of, you know, the stuff that I had read most recently. Which,
like the Batman?
Oh my God. It was like some of the worst storytelling I've ever read in my life.
Yeah. I think he's
horrible.
He's a beautiful artist.
He is.
But I don't know about his writing because it's just weird. So like, he's got like this guy, he's like, I'm going to cut your hand off. And then they cut his hand off and he's like, ha ha ha, we could fix it, but we're going to put it down this garbage disposal instead. And you've got the guy screaming, no. I'm like, bro, they just cut off your hand.
Some artists turn out that they can write stories like you wouldn't believe.
Right.
He's not one of them.
Uh-uh. I'm a sucker for like weird stuff. So when Chris Starr was in the Deadpool team up, I bought the first issue. Not good.
Not good, huh?
Oh. And I don't always hate Rob's writing, but I didn't like this one. I don't know if it feels out of sync with like modern comics or what, but something about it just did not hit for me.
I don't think that he's a very good writer.
Yeah.
I hope Mike doesn't listen to this. I don't think Todd McFarlane is all that great of a writer.
I like Spawn better than a lot of stuff that Rob's done, though.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's moments in Spawn where I think there's at least good seeds there, even if maybe the dialogue's not perfect.
I think that overall, like, some of his ideas are fine. He's even after all these years, I don't think he's the best.
No, because when I have to make cuts, I will cut the main Spawn title before I will some of the side ones that I enjoy more.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I keep getting scorched. And I do have to say to myself, you're not just buying it for the She Spawn covers, are you? And I'm going, maybe a little. But now that John Layman's been on it, I've actually been really enjoying it too. So it's fun because you get all the different Spawn characters and you get John Layman. So
yeah, I did drop Scorched.
Okay.
That's the one that I dropped. That's the only one actually that I had dropped, although I'm not continuing with Rat City. I did.
Rat City I like okay, but yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm dropping it. I'm honestly trying to do as much cutback as I can. And
yeah, me too. I got one of those talks. They're like, you've been buying a lot lately. And I go, okay, let me trim some.
Yeah, and I've been doing a decent job trying to pull back. And honestly, Spawn ones are the only ones that are $2.99. I'm like, well, I'm getting a lot, but they're only $2.99. I could probably cut somewhere else, but I don't know.
I know that feeling, but you know, even dollar comics add up. So that's a lot of times how I'll do the math is I'll be like, okay, this is how many dollar books that'll like actually last. A lot of times it take you a lot longer to read. And so that's how I end up whenever I do a big cut, like almost all the Marvels start to disappear one after another. Cause I'm like, I like them cause you love the characters, but I don't know if I love what's going on enough to keep on with it, you know?
Yeah.
No. I hate X-Force, by the way. I've read two issues and I'm not digging it.
I've read two issues, not really excited about it. I haven't pulled it off yet, but if it just continues on for a couple more, I'll probably drop it.
Yeah, it definitely did not make the cut. X Factor seems like it's going to be fun.
Yeah,
it's moving up as one of my favorites.
Honestly, I didn't love the first issue. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
But that's all that I've read so far. I'm looking forward to trying a couple more issues and see what I think. Exceptional, I haven't been able to read yet because they were shorted at the LCS. So they probably have it now for me. I just haven't gone the past couple weeks, so
I can't get excited about it. Every time I look at the cover, I go, I'll read something else, and I flip past it. So
I like Kitty Pryde. Oh, you know, NYX, I was excited about because I like the characters, but so far I'm not loving what they're doing in the story. It's not what I expected, I guess. So
it was okay. Sure.
Yeah.
It was kind of one of those, you know, for me.
Yeah.
The first Wolverine I liked.
Oh, I haven't read that yet either, but it is on my pile.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
That's good. That's good to know.
All right, holler at me with your next book. What are we doing?
All right, so we're going to go start with a mainstream here, too. And I don't know if you were, back in the day, if you were a sucker to these covers, but I certainly was. It's Avengers number 221.
Okay.
And it says, who will be the newest members of the Avengers?
Oh,
and it has little headshots of about 15 different heroes.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic right there.
Spider-Man, Wolverine, Dazzler, Hawkeye, Rom.
I love Invisible Girl. I always thought that was funny.
Invisible Girl, yeah, there's nothing there. And then it says pick two, answer inside. So as a kid, oh, my God. Joe, the Avengers are getting some new members. Who's it going to be? I have to pick this up.
Now I wish it had been Black Bolt, for God's sake. Okay, let's hear what happens.
So we start off right away, right on the first page at the Avengers Mansion. And we have three of the mainstays with Cap, Iron Man, and Thor, and the current chairman, who's the Wasp. They're all talking, and they say, we need some new blood. We've talked about this before. But we're constantly, you know, in battles. And now that we have a little bit of downtime, let's make a decision and get a couple more members, get us back up to the full six. This was at the time, I believe, that they were mandated by the government through that. Remember, what was his name? Peter Gyrick?
Yeah.
So I think they had to have like six members or something like that, no more than
six. Yeah, because that was another one of those famous covers where they had everybody, including the then Guardians of the Galaxy, around the round table.
Yes.
Like he's like, there's too frickin' many of you.
Yeah.
And that was one of those famous ones where they like pared it down. Yeah.
Yeah, that was another one that you said, oh my God, I gotta pick this up. I gotta see what's happening.
Right.
So, anyhow, they all agree and they kind of, decide that they're gonna think about this and, come back at their next meeting, kind of, you know, come up with some ideas. And you know, typically, of course, you know, Captain, they each say what they think is important. And they're right up their own alleys here. Like Captain America says compatibility. You know, he wants to make sure that someone that can work together as a team. And Iron Man wants technical expertise and knows weaponry. And of course, Thor, you know, he thinks that courage and a noble heart is important. And then what do we know about the Wasp? What is she typical for? Apparently she's not known for anything because she just decides that they need more girls.
I thought you were going to say somebody with good fashion sense. That was,
well, I mean, that would have been at least a little bit more. Like about her personality, they just right. had her say more girls.
Right.
So anyhow, she gets interrupted by Jarvis because it turns out she's got a showing for her fashion designs at the Tavern on the Green. So even though they need some new members, she's got to go for her fashion show. So
there you go.
So they all take off and say, you know, we'll get back together and we'll get some ideas. As Captain America and Iron Man are leaving, Captain America says, you know, when Hawkeye was on the team, he was a pretty good member. And Iron Man says, oh, you know, that might not be a bad idea. The only one still at the mansion is Thor, and he's thumbing through a Time magazine. And Jarvis comes and brings him some mead properly to 48 degrees. Or, I mean, sorry, 78 degrees. And...
Well, he's just got Jarvis. Mead on hand.
Yes, of course. We gotta have. I mean, we didn't get Thor there. So he asked Jarvis what, you know, he would look for, and Jarvis is taken by surprise, and he says, "You know what?" He's like, "It's funny because those that typically you wouldn't think of would work, you know, in a team end up sometimes being some of our best members, you know, that are strong, independent individuals." And it just so happens the Time magazine that Thor's reading has Spider-Man's face on the cover, and that gives him an idea.
Right.
So we cut away, and you know, you got Steve Rogers and Tony Stark discussing the Hawkeye situation. They said, "Okay, tomorrow let's go out and meet with them." And in the meantime, Wasp is back at her place, and she's talking to her secretary, and they're putting together a list of different female superheroes that they can invite over to the house to kind of have a meeting and see if anyone's interested. So they decide to invite Black Widow, Sue Storm, Dazzler, Spider-Woman, and She-Hulk.
And that's a good mix because three of them have had or have solo series at this time. So
yeah.
I mean, three of those make a lot of sense.
Right?
Yeah.
So...
Would have worked, though, I don't think. But
who's whatever. That?
I don't think Sue Storm ever would have worked.
Oh,
I think
no,
that's a weird one, because she's not going to leave the Fantastic Four.
I thought it was weird to even invite her to see if she's interested.
Yeah, same.
She's on a current team with her family, so I don't know. Yeah. But Thor is flying overhead now. He's searching Central Park, and there's these guys that just knocked off a pawn shop and running away. And they get to go through a tunnel in Central Park, and at the other end of the tunnel, Spider-Man has made a web, and you know, he starts fighting them. They quickly turn heel and run the other way, and who's at the other end but Thor? And he summons a storm to go directly into the tunnel, like just a deluge of water, and it washes all of the robbers out the other end, and also Spider-Man. Spider-Man's not exactly thrilled because his tights are soaking wet now. And Thor, you know, offers his apologies and says he wants to talk to him. So they meet up on top of a building somewhere private. And, you know, he says, you know, we'd like to offer you a position as an Avenger. And he's like, you know, you asked me a few years ago and I wasn't sure. He's like, I'm still not sure, but I am flattered. Let me think about it and I'll let you know. So he really genuinely can't believe that Thor wants him as an Avenger, but doesn't know if it'd be a good idea, and they part ways. So the next day, we have Iron Man and Captain America come to Cross Technological Enterprises, and who's the chief security guard there but Hawkeye? He actually works there. So they they said, you know, we're looking for a couple members and, you know, we're thinking about you. And Hawkeye is pretty upset because they kicked him out in the past. And
right. He's
like, you expect me to come crawling back after you booted me? I'm the head of security here, man. And, And Iron Man's like, you know, we understand, but you know what? At least consider it and let us know if you've reached a decision. And he goes, okay, old buddy, but don't hold your breath. Cause I got a good thing going here. I got job security. I got respect. I must be out of my mind. And he runs, and they had just walked out to the hallway. He goes running out, calling them and says, hey guys. And he shoots an arrow, and on the magazine that he was flipping through when they came in, he's written yes. So Hawkeye's in. He's all bluster, but he's not a fool. So
right.
he's going to join the Avengers. So we get back to Janet's house and, Sue Storm, shows up and she makes her way inside and part of the gardening crew is this one guy and he starts saying, haha, they laughed at me. They mocked me. I'll show the Avengers. He's the Mechano Marauder, and he's going to attack their weakest member when there's no one else around, and she'll be helpless.
Boy, you picked the wrong day.
Did. So Sue, Jan escorts Sue in, and Dazzler and Spider-Woman and Black Widow are already there. And, they all, meet up and talk to each other. And there's a little bit of a beef between Spider-Woman and Dazzler. And I don't remember exactly what happened, but it was in the Dazzler series.
Yeah, it was in that Essentials I read, in her regular series.
Yeah, I think she tried to hire her as a private detective to find her mom, Dazzler's mom. And it didn't go well. So they're kind of being catty to each other, but Black Widow settles them down quickly as the doorbell rings and Jan's butler gets it, and of course it's She-Hulk. She comes walking in, and who's it? Oh, it's Jan's chauffeur is just outside, just sitting on his car. I don't know why he's just hanging out there, but he comes running in, saying, "Oh, get out of the way! Get out of the way!" And it's the Mechano Marauder in this weird looking. You know that. You know this thing, I don't remember what it's called, but that, have you seen RoboCop?
Yeah.
Okay, you know the thing that, like, that the police make on the two, it has those two legs and the gun arms and stuff? Yeah.
Yep.
So it kind of looks like that, but he has regular arms and he's got a transparent bubble on the top where the actual man is sitting. And, so he grabs Dazzler, the fist goes right through the window and grabs Dazzler. And they're like, oh my God, what is this? And Daz was like, don't worry about me. He's not squeezing me. He's just holding me in his grip. And, so Sue, creates a force field as Mechano is running his machine straight at them. Of course, it hits the bubble and he goes, ouch! And he lets go of, Dazzler and, oh no, he still had Dazzler. I thought he let go in this one panel, but no, he still had. So he's pounding on the invisible barrier with one fist and holding Dazzler with the other. And she's had enough. So she, shoots out a, bright light, high intensity and blinds him. And so he starts going haywire and driving all over the place. And so. Right mid-fight, this is how seriously they're taking this Mechano Marauder. Both Spider-Woman and or is it Spider-Woman or is it? Sorry, hang on, I got to go back. Oh, sorry, it's Dazzler and Sue Storm. Right in the middle of this, they're like, "Well, yeah, thanks, Wasp, but you know," Dazzler says, "I'm a singer, not a fighter," and Sue says, "I'm too busy with the FFS. See you guys later." So they literally leave. And Spider-Woman come out of the house, so they're now being replaced by the two that. And,
it's like process of elimination.
Yeah. So Mechano at first is like, all right, there's two left. And like, nope, never mind. There's two more. Now they're fighting, and Spider-Woman blasts one of the arms with her little venom blast, and makes it malfunction, and she goes, okay, I'm out of here too. So she leaves. But Black Widow takes the line that she's swinging on and wraps it around his feet, so it just comes crashing down. And she's like, well, you know what? I've got private business that I need to take care of, so I don't have time for the Avengers either. Thanks, guys. And she's like, oh, sorry about all the distractions. They're like, oh, no, no problem. We're out of here. Goodbye. And so now it's just Jen and She-Hulk, and the thing gets in, the Mechano Marauder gets up, and now he says, I'm really angry. Now you've had it. And so, you know, She-Hulk turns and says, oh, shut up, and just knocks him. And it knocks him right out of that big contraption, but he puts this helmet on, and now he's got a mini suit that he was wearing inside this larger thing. So he's like, oh, I'm still going to get him. And he lands, but he made this thing way too heavy, right, and it actually sunk like knee deep into the ground, and he's stuck. He can't get out. So Wasp is the only one that hasn't had her chance against him. So she shoots a intense concentrated beam at his chest plate, burns a hole into it, and she flies in and flies up to his face and just whaps him and knocks him out. So
it's so funny you think Wasp is the weakest. Who else could like literally put a hole in your face and like fly into your brain pan?
Exactly.
Wasp could jack you up.
Exactly. I'm like, wow, that was, yeah. But it was, I loved how they did it, where like these ladies are just hanging out and like they're chatting and talking and stuff. And it's like, this is like a minor distraction to their day, where it really isn't like on their radar so much that like members are literally like, after they like take a shot, are literally leaving because he's no threat whatsoever to anyone.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So that was the fight scene of the entire issue. And Jarvis, then we cut back to the couple days later, and Jarvis is talking to the State Department to get clearance for two new Avengers and for their ID cards and stuff. And sure enough, they hand the cards over, and there's one for Hawkeye and one for She-Hulk. So, so they end up coming to the mansion, and they kind of all introduce each other to everyone, and say, okay, we're all Avengers. You know what I thought was weird on the last page is because She-Hulk hadn't met Hawkeye before, but he comes in and like is kind of surprised to see her. And she's smoking like one of those lady cigarettes.
Oh, Virginia Slim?
Yeah, Virginia Slim, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen her smoke before.
Yeah, that seems out of character a little bit.
Yeah.
Being grim all of a sudden?
Yeah, it was really weird. But anyhow, it was really a fun issue with like just a lot of character interaction and just a fight scene played for laughs, which was a lot of fun.
I got one question for you.
Yeah.
How influential was this issue to like Brian Michael Bendis, this cover? Because
that's what I was wondering.
Because you got four, five of the major new Avengers, Hawkeye, Spider-Woman, Wolverine, Spider-Man, and Luke. And then you've got two of the Illuminati, Doctor Strange and Black Bolt.
Yeah.
He's like, what can I do with this cover?
Yeah. I know. That's what I was wondering as well. I was surprised to see Wolverine on there because, you know, this was very early on where he was popular, but he wasn't popular. Like it was getting close. I think it was right before his miniseries. It might have been right around the same time as his miniseries.
Right.
But he hadn't exploded yet.
That's wild. What a great cover. What a weird story. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
So what else do you have?
All right. So the other one we've got is a second printing because black and whites back in those days, I don't know if you knew this, but 1986 were a hot commodity, apparently. So a lot of stuff would go to a second print. Joe Crawford does not give a turd which printing it is, because I don't care. I'll take whatever's cheapest. I mean, I just want the story. So this is Troll Lords, number one, from True Studios, written and illustrated by Scott Biederstadt and Paul Fricke. Interestingly enough, Brian Augustine, I know that name. I can't remember where he ended up, but he's the editor on it. And this is the second printing from 1986. You ever read any Troll Lords?
Nothing.
Okay. So I had a couple of random issues I picked up when the record store quit carrying comics for a while. Of course, now they're back to carrying comics, and they're all twice as big as expensive because post-COVID. Anyway, and I liked them. And then I remember Kirk saying number one was a really hard one to get back in the 80s, and I saw it in the dollar markdown on my comic shop. So I was like, it's second printing. I'm going to grab it.
Yeah.
So – all right, so it says, once upon a time, because that's how troll stories start, right? So it shows their bridge, because trolls live under a bridge, and it's been flooded out. And because it got flooded, apparently they drowned, because it shows them with their heads in water, and it says it was a deadly mistake had happened. Well, anyway, so you kind of got to read between the lines, but for some reason, because I guess they drowned in the real world, now they're in some kind of like afterlife or another dimension. And they're basically like, we got to figure out how to get home, the bridge, our home, our world. I think it's all gone. Everything is dark and empty. So they're just kind of on this path with like floating bits flying around. So it's, and one of them's like, it feels like we've been walking forever. And they start singing 100 bottles of beer on the wall. And, of course, one of them slapped him, because that's what you do when somebody starts singing 100 bottles of beer on the wall. They get to a door, and they're, like, looking at it. There's a big crossbones on it. He says, that sign, I don't think this is the way we want to go. Ah, shut up, coconut head. Jerry, give me a boost, and let's see what this can get us. So if you look at them, one of them's completely bald. One of them's got, like, Larry hair, which is, I guess, why they call him Jerry. And the other one's got, like, a head wrap, which I don't know what
that's
that
Mo.
Is. Oh, is that it? And that's Mo? Okay.
I don't know.
You got me.
Because it, normally, it wouldn't color Jerry would look Mo, like.
But yeah, he's got like a bandana on, like, Tupac style or something. It's, I don't know what's going on. So they knock. They hear, come in, boys, come in. What took you so long? And it's supposed to be Death, and it's basically like a big skeleton. He says, I'm forgetting my manners. Let's see, you must be Harold, Gerald, and Lawrence. So he's like, are we dead? Oh, yeah, you are most certainly deceased. Must I say, we don't get many trolls here. Ha, 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 ha. And so he's looking in his book. He says, this is odd. It seems there was a slight error. Your names have been omitted from the book. I don't know where to send you. So, you know, they didn't want to go to hell. So they're like, we'll be good. Please send us back. Please. There's no future. We don't want to stay dead. Pretty please. And he goes, all right, knock it off. I'm in charge. I'll do what must be done here. What do you want to do? I better phone in for this one. So he grabs the phone. He says, Chief, I got a problem. Listen to this. So the guy goes, Harold, and says, I don't know about you guys, but I'm cutting out of here before he gets mad. And they're like, I'm with you. And he's back on the phone. Yes, sir, you're telling me I have no authority, but, sir, I want this situation cleared up. And I forget which one's which. I'm going to call them bald, headband, and hair.
Okay.
So the one with the headband goes, hey, Pinhead, look at this, another door. Maybe this is our chance. So they push the door open, and Death's still on the phone. He's like, yes, sir, I'll wait till I hear from you. Yes, sir, no worries, sir. They're not going anywhere, sir. And, of course, they did. So they hoof it out the door. And Death's still on the phone. He says, looks like we're stuck together. And he hungs the phone up. Trolls, trolls, trolls! Where did you go? Don't do this to me. Come on, trolls. Where are you? Come out, trolls. Damn it. I know I'm going to catch hell for this. So now they're in, kind of like before it was like this path with floating rocks around. This looks very much like the Rainbow Bridge that they're walking on. The hairy one goes, fellas, I don't think this is the way we came in. What's the difference as long as it gets us out of here? I hope this path leads us to television. The path? What path? Whoop. So they do that cartoon thing where they're walking along until they notice that they're not walking on anything.
Yeah, yeah,
I love that. Yeah. So anyway, and then they're falling. And he goes, guys, we're home. And he's like, we're home. We're back. Where's the TV? Where's Harry? Oh, my God, Harry. Harry, are you okay? Speak to us. And he goes, ah, patchouli. And he spits him in the eye. That's not nice. He says, don't you chowderhead see what happened here? Look at this place. This entire cavern's been drenched, flooded, destroyed. Even the TV. Yeah, but at least we're still alive. So they drowned, died, went to death, and somehow fell off by going through another door, and they're back to where they were.
Huh.
Okay. So far, that's the story. Now we see a woman, she's driving in her car, and she's writing a letter. It says, this isn't going to be an easy letter to lie, letter to die. God, help me. Rob, if you get braces as a 50-year-old, it's really annoying. Okay.
Oh, did you have that?
Oh, yeah, I have braces.
I did not know that.
It gives you stupid mouth, I find. anyway, so she's written a letter. Basically, she's going to kill herself. Her name's Kelly. She goes, in a few minutes, all this pain will be over. No more heartache, no more suffering, no more anything. Let's get this over with. And, of course, the bridge she's about to jump off of is the Trolls Bridge.
Of course.
So they're down at the bottom. They're like, move it, lunkheads. We're almost through. Stop messing around. So they're down. They quit complaining. And then you see her flying off the bridge. And then she falls in the water. So they jump in the water as she's slowly coming to the realization that, like, no, I can't do this. I don't want to do this. So she swims out. They grab her. Sounds like someone's in trouble. Look in the middle of the river. Oh, God, I'm not going to make it. Hurry up. She's going under. There she is. I found her. Hold on, Jerry. Because, you know, in these black and white comics, you would always have one very attractive young woman who would befriend turtles, mutated teenage rats, kangaroos,
oh, sure.
Or in this case, trolls.
That's right.
Right? Yeah, that's what happened. So they look at her billfold, and they're like, what's going on here? I don't know, but it's them again. And who's them again? I don't know what they're talking about. Judging from the sound, it's pretty close. Who the hell's them again? Oh, that's right. It's hunters. I was like, I read this yesterday, and I already forgot who the hell the them again was. So it's like some three hillbillies out in the woods shooting. And he says, no sign of them. They couldn't have got too far. Come on, Elmer, give it up. We've been out here all night. Let's start heading back. Quit squawking, Marvin. I'm on to one. So they get to a sign that says, warning, no hunting, no trespassing. Oh, great. We're lost. I've never seen that sign before. Hee hee. What sign? Kablooey. Hawk? What does hawk mean? Oh, maybe he's hawking a loogie. Gross.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Let's go behind this bush. Get your gun ready. And they go behind the bush. It's the three trolls that go, yeah! And they're off. Works every time. Wonder what they were after. Oh, dear. Why, Harry, I didn't know you cared. Cut the comedy, cornhead. We got a problem here. Oh, it's a fawn. Poor thing, so scared. It's cornered itself in a bush. This is the cutest little deer I've ever seen. That was Joe talking, in case you were wondering. So they rescue the fawn from these hunters, and then Death is all pissed off and shows up. Your lives mean nothing anymore. This little charade has gone far enough. You are mine. Next, the ungrateful dead. So, three trolls die, come back to life, save girl, save fawn from hunters, scare off hunters, Death comes to get them. And then you've got, I don't know if this is just for the second printing, but there's actually a ton of back matter, which I don't remember happening very often in comics back in the day.
No.
So it's kind of cool. A lot of extras, but maybe they did that for the second printing only. I'm guessing that's the case. And then House Dad, Follow the Troll Lords and All Their Adventures. Issues 2 and 3 are still available. And coming in August, the next Troll Lords epic from True Studios.
I didn't like that.
Yeah. It was a fun issue. It was weird, but I liked it.
That's cool.
I'm sorry I couldn't remember the names.
They
basically all look the same except for little. I mean, it's like you need the little letter on their belt so you know who's who. Kind of like.
Yes, this. Exactly. So I have one thing left, and it's not a comic. It's a movie that I watched a few days ago, actually while I was doing some data entry at work. So I am going to keep the Wikipedia up to keep me straight.
Sure.
Because, it's worth talking about, but it's, you know, like I said, I was working at the same time. It's definitely an odd one. So the name of the movie, and I just came across it because I can't remember what I was searching for. I was searching for something else. And I was on the, I don't know if you've ever been on the Real Good app.
No.
EL. It's a nice app that will tell you, like, if you're looking for a movie, it will tell you what streaming services it's on.
Oh, nice.
You plug in what streaming services you subscribe to,
mm-hmm.
When you're setting it up. And then when you, if you look for a movie, it'll tell you, yeah, you can watch it here. You can watch it there. Or
rent it from Amazon. Tell you,
like, it's not available on any of your streaming services. You know? So anyhow, whatever I was looking for wasn't available. And then it had like some other suggestions below. And this was one of them from 1967, Spider Baby. Or The Maddest Story Ever Told.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know that one.
No. So 1967, the main star, if you will, is Lon Chaney Jr. So he was much older, obviously, at this time than at the Universals. Also, I don't know if you're familiar with who Sid Haig is, but... he was in a lot of the Rob Zombie movies.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen any of
them. Yes, I do know. Yep, I know that guy. Yep.
The fountain looking guy.
Yep.
Captain something or other. I can't remember what his name was. But anyhow, he was here. He's in this one as a younger man, just as a smaller role. But anyhow, basically what we've got here is it opens up with this particular this man just doing an introduction saying that there's an affliction called Maria syndrome, and it causes people to as they get older, they regress down the evolutionary ladder mentally. So he's like, you know, it was confined to this particular family called the Marys, and it's now extinct. And I'll tell you how. So we open up it with a scene with a mailman coming to deliver something to what we find out is the Mary house, and he rings the bell at the gates. And nobody's there, so he lets himself in through the gates, and he's looking around to see where he can deliver or drop off the mail or what have you. I don't know what possesses him to do this, but there's an open window, and he decides to stick his head and upper torso into the first floor window, and there's this one girl, and she's like, oh, we're going to play spider. You're in my web. And she's got like a net type thing. And he's looks scared and doesn't move. And she throws like this makeshift net over his top part of his body. And she's like, and now I'm going to sting you. And she's got a knife, and she keeps stabbing and slashing him. And she keeps saying, sting, 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 sting. So this is one of the kids that live there. She looks like she's in her late teens or maybe early 20s, but I think she's meant to be a teenager. But sure enough, a chauffeur shows up, and it's Bruno that is, played by Lon Chaney Jr. And he is the caretaker to these three children that live here that are suffering from this Mary syndrome. Their father had passed away also from this syndrome, and he made him promise to look after his children. So that's what he's doing. He gets there and he sees that this mailman has been killed, and he starts scolding this girl whose name is Elizabeth. And he says, oh, what are we going to do? So they dispose of the body. He looks and sees the letter that was being sent, and it turns out that this particular woman and her brother are distant relatives of the Mary family, and they are coming with their lawyer, and his secretary to claim the property as rightful heirs. And they're coming like literally like later that day. So Emily is the sister. Peter is the brother. The lawyer is Mr. Schlocker. His secretary is Anne. I don't expect you to remember all this, but I'm going to just start saying the name so I can get it straight in my head.
Sure.
The kids that live there are, I'm sorry. It wasn't Elizabeth that killed. It was Virginia. Virginia is obsessed with spiders and she plays that game. Elizabeth is probably the most responsible of the three, but she's also got the same disease. And then Ralph is played by Sid Haig. And he is older than the other two, and he's much more down the evolutionary ladder, if you will, and he doesn't talk anymore or anything like that, and he's very animalistic. They all show all those visitors show up, and Bruno tries to make all the kids presentable and stuff, and he basically tries to tell Emily and the rest of the family that they have just psychological mental problems and aren't mentally developed, but the father insisted that he takes care of them, not put them in an institution. They insist on staying for dinner and he's, oh no, no, we can't, we can't have. And, they will hear nothing of it. So they say, we're going to have dinner. And they're like, well, we just are vegetarians here. And, to eat meat is just actually makes the syndrome, progress faster. They're like, well, that's, we're going to stay. And so, Ralph goes to hunt for something for the rest of the people to eat. He ends up off screen. It's very clear that he kills a cat.
Okay.
They cook the cat. They serve the cat.
Gross.
They pass it off. Peter is that uncle, and he assumes that it's rabbit. And nobody says anything that it's not. So Emily and Schlocker, they pass on it, but Peter and the secretary Anne both decide that they want to try the rabbit. So they eat it, and Peter is actually very surprised at how good it is. And it's played up for comedy as well. And
right.
And anyhow, without going like beat by beat, the family decide that they're going to stay overnight, and Bruno tries to tell them not to and stuff. There's not enough places for them to sleep and everything else. And they said, well, no, surely, the girls can sleep downstairs, and Bruno, you can sleep on this couch or whatever. And we'll take, I'll take this room, and Schlocker will take the other room, and Anne and Peter will go into town for a hotel. So that's what they plan on. But Schlocker, of course, in the middle of the night decides that he wants to start investigating the house as the lawyer. He starts looking around and he goes down to the basement and he finds that the father's siblings are kept in a pit, and they're still alive in the basement. They quickly he sees it. He gets away. He starts running. So Virginia and Elizabeth, as the two teenage girls, they don't want him reporting this, so they murder him. Bruno now realizes he's like, oh boy, this is not good. And he's like, I need you two to behave. I will take care of this, but I need to go into town to grab something that your father, it's a big surprise. Your father, had planned for. I'll be right back. Please behave yourselves. So he leaves. In the meantime, of course, Emily wakes up and they start terrorizing her, and she runs out of the house, and Peter and the secretary find no rooms available, so they come back to the house just as things are going crazy. They manage to separate Anne and Peter, and Virginia starts playing a game of spider with Peter. They actually tie him up to it. To a chair. Now that they actually like Peter because Peter has been very, very kind to them. Right. But even so, they're crazy. So, Virginia ties them all up in a chair and then goes to get her knife to sting him. And, just in time, Elizabeth asks for help because she's got Anne all tied up and needs help. needs Virginia's help because Ralph and Elizabeth are struggling with her. So they do that, saving Peter's life at that point. In the woods, Emily had run away. She decides to come back and starts attacking Ralph, and the sisters start defending him. In the meantime, we finally get, Peter manages to wiggle out of his confinement in that chair, and manages to free Anne while they're all contending with Emily. They don't run out yet. They're all there, and Bruno shows up, and he tells Peter to him and Anne to just run away, to run away and escape. And he shows the girls and Ralph, and Emily is still there as well, of what the surprise was, and it's a big stack of dynamite. And he goes ahead, and he lights it, and the entire house explodes, killing everyone inside. Peter and Anne are the only survivors. They end up getting married. You learn that Peter is actually the one that gave that little speech at the beginning of the introduction, and he's the sole remaining heir. He inherits the family fortune, marries Anne, and writes a book on the Mary syndrome. He goes on to say that, as he said at the beginning, that the Mary syndrome is extinct, and his side of the family had never suffered from it. And they cut away to Anne and Peter's daughter, who's I don't know, she's young, eight, and she's playing in the backyard, and you see her suddenly become fascinated with a spider in the garden. And then that's it. Yeah. Nice. I saw it it's free on Amazon Prime.
Yep.
It is definitely worth a watch. It is a wacky, wacky movie from the title all the way through the end.
Is it gory?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Mm-mm, not at all. It's played up for comedy. Mm-hmm. Any killing that happens, you actually don't see. It's kind of like when you think about Psycho, like you think, oh my God, how you saw like Marion Crane get killed, in the shower and stuff. And you actually didn't see any blood at all. It's like, it's all your imagination. Yeah. And it's kind of the same way, like when that mailman gets killed at the beginning. It's just from his point of view. You're just seeing Virginia just slashing the thing, but you're not seeing any blood or any effects of the attack. You're seeing her in the camera just slashing the knife back and forth.
Got it.
So no, it's not gory at all. It was really enjoyable. It was just a crazy, wacky movie that I just. It was nuts.
Well, I'm gonna have to check that one out because I just looking at it, that looked like one I would enjoy.
Yeah, it was funny to see Lon Chaney. I mean, I looked up. I don't remember when he died, but I think it was the early 70s. Was it too much? Maybe 5 years before he made this before he died.
Right.
But just weird that he was in this kind of weird. Movie. Try to see.
I don't know why I thought of it. It made me think of what was it called? This Dark House for some reason.
Dark House is a good one too.
Yeah, it, like the fact they're like trying to spend the night there, and there's like somebody who's just completely wild running around loose. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it sounded a lot different too. But I always think of those kind of movies are a lot of fun, where like somebody rolls up on a house and then like, yeah, you don't want to be here.
It was definitely enjoyable, enjoyable movie, and just wacky and you know, kind of comedic. Like even as you know, there's deaths, there's murders happening. It's not obviously it doesn't take itself seriously, so.
Right.
Yeah. But that's all I have today.
Well, very cool. We probably should wrap up. I know you got to get to something, don't you?
Yeah, we got a bunch of stuff that we got to get through today. It's we were kind of off track yesterday, and I knew today we were going to do a lot of chores and running around the errands, so I really probably need to get going. But yeah, this was fun. I'm glad we were able to do that.
Me too.
Yeah.
So you've been I can't even talk. What have we been listening to, Rob?
I think that we've been listening to Geek Brunch Retrocast with myself, Rob Krieger, and Joe Crawford. We usually also have Michael Myers.
Yep.
And every once in a blue moon, Chris Ivey will join us.
Anytime Christopher Ivey is on, it is a great treat.
Yeah.
I always like to know which movies he's been watching lately.
Yeah, he watches some good ones. I would say that you could find me on Twitter at Rob Krieger, but I really don't. I really have gone off of Twitter for the most part, Joe.
I have
I'll go on there
just
you know chat with you guys. But that's about it. And you're at Iowa's Joe.
I have officially left Twitter, but I am at Iowa's Joe on Blue Sky, Threads.
All right.
And Blue Sky Threads and Instagram. So all three of those you can get me, Iowa's Joe.
There you go. And I have a Blue Sky account, but I'm not on there any more than I'm on Twitter. And then Mike Myers Brunch. Is that right? And Chris doesn't really have any presence right now on social media. He's had it with social media, and probably rightfully so.
Yeah, no kidding.
But thanks for doing this. This was a blast.
Yeah, it's always a treat to talk to you, sir.
Absolutely. I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and I hope you have a good week coming up.
You too. We'll talk to you soon, hopefully.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, bye.